Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias! Actually, hi, hello, YouTube. Hi, hit the like button. You are very important to us. We greatly appreciate you. But, Nikias, a lot of shooting hoops going on, man. A lot of good basketball happening these days. We are on the push to the playoffs. The post-All-Star break has been kind. You know what time it is. It's not Tiffy time. It's time to hoop it up.
It's not Tiffy time. Very quickly, do you have Elimination Chamber?
No, we don't have time.
Okay, fair enough then. So catch us on Thursday. But no, excited to hoop it up. Also, quick shout out to our guy, friend of the program, Mark Jones, giving our dear friend Steve the shout out after an Aaron Gordon dunk from the dunker spot.
From the dunker spot, embracing his bounce, Aaron Gordon. Shout out to Steve Jones on that.
He did, in fact, embrace his bounce. That was very cool. I was out while that happened. I went to the Asia Wilson book event. And so to see Bob Mitchell's blow up, like, hey, Dunker Spot got a shout out. Excuse me? They did what now? And to get the clip, that's big time. That's fire. We appreciate you, big dog. That's good stuff right there.
I like how you slid that under the radar. I made a peace treaty. So I said, no jokes. So salute. What's next?
It was a cool event. All right. Well, then, as you said, we've had a lot of NBA basketball, a lot of fun stuff. We are past the All-Star break. We're going to get into this push to the playoffs. Let's talk about some teams that have caught our eye post-All-Star break or just in general, like leading into the break, who's caught our eye, who we have some questions about. We're going to get back to the traditional format. So let's roll with it. Steve, who are some teams that have caught your eye as of late?
Well, for me, the number one thing is this is a fun time of the year. We're seeing more of these matchups. We're seeing teams gear up. Like, for me, this is where it gets really fun. I know that sounds like casual behavior because it's post-All-Star break and a lot more people tune in. Stakes are tuning up. But we're starting to see these teams that we've learned things about, these teams that we've seen the highs and lows start to execute at different levels in different matchups. And for that, I point to the Boston Celtics. We talked about that with JJ Redick on the old man, the three things. So after you watch this video, watch that video or do both. It's all good. But Boston, winners of eight straight as we record this, has really just continued to hit level after level, note after note. You see that in matchup after matchup. You're just getting that blend of talent and versatility and the movement they have, the tempo they play with. The wave of talent, as I feel it, is what's really standing out to me. Where we can watch the Celtics play the Knicks and Jason Tatum's first free throw comes with 7 minutes left. And then he takes another shot, 6:56 left in the first quarter. And it doesn't feel unnatural. Now, that might hurt his MVP case to some folks, but that's where Boston has worked towards, to where Jaylen Brown, when he has one of those nights, it's so impactful. Porzingis mixes in those shots. That's very impactful. The usage of Drew Holiday, something we've talked about, opening things up for their offense. Derek White being able to compete on both ends of the floor and having an impact. There's no one true person you can lock in on because of the way they're playing offensively. And I think it just ties into their defense as well. Because of the activity of Drew Holiday and Derek White, which has been so fun to watch. There's a possession, Nikias, that's burned in my brain against Brooklyn before the All-Star break. Drew switches onto Mikal Bridges, right? Another screen comes. Now Derek White switches onto Mikal Bridges, which unfortunate right there. But Brooklyn resets. Nick Claxton's like, hey, I'm going to set a pick and roll. Kristaps Porzingis is deep in the paint in a drop. Drew Holiday from the wing says, you know what, buddy? I'll just take this. You flow to mine, Derek White. And that's where I'm like, hey, man. That's a lot to deal with, especially in a playoff context. When those two can have that activity, you have size and length. You think about how important that defense is to their offense. If you have tempo questions, if you have matchup questions, when they get stops, they get out and run, they make quick decisions, they get in a flow, they get great ball movement. It's an A or B scenario. But I definitely want to give another hat tip to the Celtics.
No, that's good stuff on Boston. Like, and as we talked about with JJ, like, the way that they are able to take things off the board defensively because of their personnel, but also just the amount of things they can toggle through, it's been a lot of fun for me. Like, when you have guards like Derek White and Jrue Holiday that can, one, just get nasty at the point of attack. They can just navigate any screen you throw at them. They can keep you out of rotation. Or because of how quick the hands are for Derek White, because of how strong and smart Jrue Holiday is, we can put Jrue Holiday on a big if we want to. We can put him on a wing. We can turn some of the stuff that you want to use to exploit us into immediate switches. Kristaps Porzingis, we'll put him on a non-spacer, or we'll have him on a five. Or if you do have a pick-and-roll partnership that you like, how about we just put 6'10 Jason Tatum on your center? So then when you walk up the floor after the jump ball, it's like, wait a minute. Are we still running this opening set? Do we still want to try to flow into this pick and roll? It's going to be a switch now. Do we go elsewhere? And then the elsewhere is Derek White or Jrue Holiday or Jaylen Brown, who's had a good defensive season. Or now we have to engage Kristaps Porzingis. Like, none of that sounds fun. And then you dig into the fun they can have with the zone. Like, they just take so much off the table with their personnel. And that's before getting into how creative they can get. And then offensively, as you said, they get stops, they get out and run. With their starters, they are getting downhill. You got to worry about Kristaps trailing and flowing into threes. Jayden Tatum can pull up into threes whenever he wants. Like, I've, you know, if you've been a longtime dunker, you know I always keep track of how often is Tatum getting downhill versus how often is he pulling up. But like in transition, you just don't know what's coming. You get the second unit in, you got to try to match up. Oh, snap, that's Sam Hauser in the corner and nobody's within 8 feet of him. What are we supposed to do with that part? Like, you just can't get a beat on Boston. I think that would be how I would sum up the experience right now. They take stuff off the board, and depending on who has the ball, Jason Tatum can boogie whenever he wants. Jaylen Brown can do the same. Jrue Holiday, comfortable driving, pulling up, posting up smaller guys. Derek White can tilt your defense or beat a tilted defense. Kristaps is a walking mismatch, pick and pops, can space. If you switch a small defender onto him, he is bullying you on the block. They are just a buzzsaw right now. Until the MVP portion, like, I kind of feel for Jason Tatum because I think he has had a very good season. You look at some of like the box score numbers or the advanced numbers, like, does he match up to like a Shea or a Jokic or a Luka or a Giannis? Like, probably not all encompassing. But it shouldn't be lost how good he is, how impactful he is on both ends of the floor, and how important he is. Like, the driving growth, even if it doesn't pop with the box score with him averaging 12 free throw attempts or something like that, the drives feel better. The handle feels better. It feels tighter. The decision-making as a driver, when is he passing, how well, I know people are annoyed by this portion, but with the foul drawing in particular, can he seek out the body in a more natural way and get to the line that way versus some of the arm extended, he's off balance, now he's on the floor looking for a call, now Boston has to figure things out and transition defensively. Like, the foul drawing has gotten better for him. And then you zoom out and look at, if Derek White's initiating, if Jrue Holiday's initiating, or, you know, if we get the Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis pick and roll in particular, what on earth are we supposed to do now? White's made shots all year and he's a good driver. Kristaps is a pick and pop threat, and if we switch, that's a problem. If we help from anywhere else, especially when Boston sprinkles in Jrue at the dunker spot or he doesn't just have him roaming around, you can't get a beat on him. And your other two options are Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum against a tilted defense. It's frankly unfair. If they're able to be consistent with their tempo and just the general decision-making, like, they are coming out of the East if they keep playing like this. So it's been a lot of fun for Boston.
Nah, I like it. I like it. And also, whenever Jrue Holiday gets a post-up, just watch Derek White if they're in the game together. That man is going to find a gap and cut. And I love that Kristaps Porzingis is able to just really hit your mismatches whenever you feel like you should switch. It's a positive thing. I want to go really quick to the West, Nikias. Okay. Really quick to the West. I do want to give a hat tip to the Denver Nuggets. Well, actually, I want to give a hat tip to the West in general. For what feels like the 18th week in a row, if you look at the standings, the top 10 teams in the West have all won either 6, 7, or 8 of their last 10 games.
Seems good.
And think about this. New Orleans, Dallas, the Lakers, Golden State, as we record, they're 7, 8, 9, 10. They've all won 7 of their last 10 or better. They all lost over the weekend in fashions that probably made their fan bases not feel very good. To where New Orleans is like, hey, man, that's the Bulls. Dallas is like, whoa, what did Indiana do that? Lakers, it probably just pointing at Darvin Ham at this point. That's just my guess. And then Golden State's like, we really got to keep dealing with Jokic. But yeah, you got to keep dealing with Jokic. And that's the overarching theme to me. Who wants to deal with Nikola Jokic and these Nuggets in the Western Conference playoffs? This is a team that, hey, we understand who we are. We execute. We put pressure on you. Jokic is putting up numbers. You want to go small? I'm going to score. You want to send help? You know you shouldn't do that. I'm going to make the right read. Jamal Murray, hey, they're 21-3 when Jamal Murray scores 20 or more points.
Seems good.
And they find ways to open things up for him. That two-man game with Jokic, they continue to build and add to it. Being able to space the floor and get to pass and cut and keep pressure on you. When they run an action, you know, one of my favorite things, they get to stop. Jokic brings the ball up. Anyone could screen for him. Aaron Gordon, KCP. But you got Michael Porter Jr. looking to set screens on the weak side. And I just love that, the defensive versatility that they've added as far as Jokic improving in the gaps. It's not just two on the ball, automatic. We're going to get something out of it. He can play drop. He can show help. He can recover. He can guard non-shooters. They're going to navigate their screens. There's a trust level that they have. And I think that's going to factor in, especially in the playoffs, when we know what we want to get to. When it's winning time, we know the actions we want to run. We feel confident that we have enough defensively to get us through it. I don't think the one seed is their priority this year. I think their priority is being the best version of Denver that they can be. And you have in the back pocket Aaron Gordon at the five. Or, as they're experimenting now, hey, Zeke Nagy. Come on back, buddy. Give us some minutes at the five or the four. And I think the reps that their young guys have gotten, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, very, very key for the playoffs. The play has been uneven, but I think all of them had their moments this season. I think it's going to pay off down the line because you got to remember the context of it. Minutes are going to shift. So your first run is going to likely be with Jokic. That's a plus. Now, start second quarter, here comes Jamal Murray back, featuring insert starter here. Depends on the game and the matchup. But now we have the benefit as a team of having success and knowing what we need from our players around, knowing what we need archetype-wise. Peyton Watson, knock down some shots, give us some cuts, drive some closeouts, cause havoc defensively. Christian Brown, keep doing what you do. Just do a little bit better. Zeke, we need some switching from you. If you can space the floor, that's great. Give us some rolls, that's fine. But that's a positive to where we just know what we need from you as opposed to what can you do, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's going to be a plus for them. But I just want to give a shout out to Denver real quick.
Okay. And just very quickly on the Denver front. One, can we just pause a beat with Nikola Jokic in his season, as he's very firmly in the MVP race? Like, I'm not going to do the nobody's talking about Jokic. That's obviously disingenuous. Like, we know Jokic. We should know Jokic is good by now. So I'm not going to press that button. But 26-12-9, over a steal, nearly a block a game. The efficiency is down this season. And he's at 63% on twos and 35% from threes. He has a 65.1 true shooting percentage this year. And that is down, because the freaking alien had a 70 true shooting percentage last year, which I still can't get over. But more than anything, as you mentioned, there's no real answer for Jokic. You can't double him. You can't really switch against him. He can just beat all that stuff. Like, one, very quickly about him bringing the ball to the floor and getting the screens for Aaron Gordon. One of the things that I chuckle at watching Nugget games is when Aaron Gordon is the one that brings the ball to the floor, and you can kind of see teams in real time figure out, okay, wait, I know he can't shoot like that. How far can we play off the muck up whatever we think is coming? Because if we play off too far, it's just going to be a quick pitch and then something else is going to happen. He's going to receive a screen from Jamal Murray, or he's going to go screen for someone else, and now we're in trouble. So we kind of have to play up, but we can't play up too far, because then things are going to open up on the back end, especially if they throw their entry into Jokic. It's so funny watching them kind of sort through that in real time. I don't know what to do with this. And then the Nuggets score anyway, so it just doesn't end up mattering. But that just gives me a chuckle. But back to Jokic and just the defense in general. The Denver Nuggets are a top 10 defense. The Nuggets have been around a top 10 defense all year long. KCP has been phenomenal, particularly when he's been healthy. I hope he can stay that way. But KCP's been a lot of fun. MPJ continues to do his job. Aaron Gordon has been very good. And then there's Jokic, who isn't just at the level anymore, which that hasn't been a thing in a while. But at any rate, not just at the level, though he remains very good at that. As we saw in last postseason, sprinkling in more drop coverage with him, the drop numbers are good. Just one, very quickly, we'll toss out some numbers. Jokic has defended the third most pick and rolls in the league this year. On any trip featuring a pick and roll defended by Jokic, It's 0.93 points per possession. That is 12th out of 63 players to defend at least 500. Here are some of the names that he's ahead of in that stat. Bam Adebayo, you might have heard of him. Avisa Zubac, you might have heard of him. Nick Claxton, you might have heard of him. Giannis Antetokounmpo, you might have heard of him. And also Brook Lopez, you probably heard of him. Anthony Davis, I'm sure that you've also heard of him. Jokic ranks higher on all of that. And you immediately go, well, he's at the level. You got to trust the back end behind him. That's also very important and impactful, et cetera. You go to Jokic and drop. You will never guess what that number is.
What is it?
0.93 points per possession. Mm. It is the same thing. It is also his lowest figure in the last 3 years. The fact that the Nuggets have been able to continue to build on the versatility that they have, and Jokic has been fine in drop. He's been fine at the level. As Steve pointed out on the Old Man and Three Things episode, being able to play with, hey, Jokic, how about you go guard this wing over here? If you remember one of our earlier episodes talking about the Nuggets-Celtics game, hey, Jokic, you hop on Drew real quick. Navigate that. Denver's asking Nikola Jokic to do a lot of things, and he's doing a good job at it. It's not just the supporting cast is good. It is impactful. It's important. It's not them saving him. He is also a good defender. That shines through in the film. It also shines through in the numbers. And then you just look at what he's doing offensively. He's insane. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Now, boom. And right there, we have got our clip for tomorrow. Why Nikias thinks Nikola Jokic is the defensive player of the year. Salute for your service. Hey, thank you, Big Dog. Just you'll be all right now. For 2 days. We'll be all right. That's crazy. But I just wanted to add, because you made some really good points. I love when you go into the Jokic stats. It's just hard, man. Because teams do a good job of defending things. You mentioned some of the switching where, okay, Denver tries to manipulate the matchups, get someone smaller in Jamal Murray. Because in my head, I'm like, hey, you probably need to stop Jamal Murray. They work to make it hard on you. And if you even if you navigate the action well, they go so quick to a rescreen or they go so quick to the next action that effort now has to be replicated and you better hope your weak side is ready and in. And that's where it gets tough. That's the fun of the Nuggets, man. I just wanted to throw that in there, man. Hey, Nikias, I got another one for you, though.
What you got?
The Bucks.
The Milwaukee Bucks?
The Milwaukee Bucks.
So their season isn't over? Is that what I'm hearing?
I would not know who said these things. But when you keep an eye on the Bucks, two wins post-All-Star, two road wins post-All-Star, beating Minnesota, beating Philadelphia, I am noticing the little things from them post-All-Star break. And it's one of those things I definitely wanted to come in here and talk about, you know, because the East, there's a little bit of wide openness to a degree. They're a game behind Cleveland for two, but they've separated themselves from the Knicks and the 76ers because the Knicks and the 76ers are going through it right now, as expected. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily their fault, but injuries are injuries. The Bucks defense feels much better right now, much stronger, and they're doing the little things. The switching, in particular, has felt a lot stronger. And the effort to keep the ball in front, to limit that dribble penetration, has felt a lot better. And that's kind of the base that they need defensively to be able to navigate some of these series. Even if you don't like the personnel, at the very least, you can see this is a team that's working harder. This is a team that understands what they're trying to do defensively. And there's value in that. Being able to double and rotate out of it whenever you need to double. We've seen that in a few games. Showing help when there's a mismatch and being able to rotate out of that. That's not something they had done consistently before. You can see there's a changed mindset there. When they need to, you know, show help on a switch, if they have a matchup they don't like, you're seeing guys in earlier at the elbow, more active. Cleaning up those little things is good because the scheme is going to be the scheme. But you need to be able to defend outside of the first action. You need to be able to defend as a team. And that's big. You know, I go back to the game against Philadelphia. The Sixers are like, hey, I think it might have been Kyle Lowry yelling, hey, get Dame in action. So Kyle Lowry's going to set the first screen. And Malik Beasley's like, hey, we're about to switch this. And we see Dame jump out, switch it against Maxey, and force it to the left. I'm like, hey, I was told that's a person that can't play defense. Didn't look like it to me. Well, it didn't look bad then either, but... Flex action. Philly runs flex action. Dame ends up switching on Tobias. It's a post up. Here comes Brooke. Giannis is right there as well. Giannis gets back out on the skip pass. There's no, they're not stopping. they're continuing to guard. I go to the Minnesota game because I'm sure question marks, right? We know Brooke's good in the drop. We know Brooke's good at rim protection. What happens when Brooke has to guard a shooting big? He's guarding Cat. He's in with Bobby Portis. Milwaukee's still switching. They're still looking to keep the ball in front and tough twos. Now, Brooke obviously magnet sometimes to the paint, but I was impressed with, okay, this is the mindset. This is what they're trying to do defensively. They're going to stick with it.
I was going to say, while we're on the Minnesota game, you talk about them working through the off-ball communication possession late in the second quarter, where Minnesota's pushing after miss. You got Dame on Cat. Like, oh no, this is about to be a post-up. And then it's just the early pre-switch, or scram switch, rather. Jay Crowder's like, no, you get out of here. We gonna deal with this. Ball in the air. Dame gets out of there. Now it's Jay Crowder. Now Cat just loses the handle from there, and it's a turnover, and Milwaukee goes the other way. So like, I'm not going to give Milwaukee credit for the turnover portion, but to the little thing portion, oh, we see a problem. Let's communicate this early. Let's do this in a timely fashion and make sure we don't open something else up elsewhere while we're trying to navigate this. Do it clean. And so, like, you know, does Cat lose the ball if he's backing down Dame versus Jay Crowder, who's stronger and bigger than him? Maybe not. But, like, the fact that you even have to think about that now because you were able to navigate that as cleanly as you do, man, that's a positive. And Milwaukee just has to continue to stack the little things within the half court, because the one thing that's shown through Underdog, the transition defense has been much better since he's gotten there. And that felt like problem area number one for Milwaukee. Like, you knew coming in, okay, going from Drew to Dame, there's just going to be a difference in point of attack, defense, switchability, stuff like that. There's going to be a drop. You can't have some of the scheme questions on top of, we don't know who we're matching up with. Dame just drove to the basket and just stood there. Giannis drove to the basket and fell. Nobody else picked up his guy. The fact that they've cleaned up that portion and now you're starting to see better flow defensively in the half court as well, I feel like that bodes well. I had some Bucks offense thoughts, but I'll let you go if you have.
No, we're going to talk about the offense because I've liked some of the things they're adding there. Offensively, just feels like they're starting to tie things together, Nekias, moving through their options a lot better, which is one of the things I was a little concerned about. You have pressure points. What actions are you going to run? But what do you do after the action? How do you play outside of the play? And you're starting to see a little bit more of those kind of things where, yes, we can point to they are setting higher screens for Damian Lillard, which I think is a plus. But
got some for that too.
We're now seeing where we start this high pick and roll with Dame. He gets in the paint if he turns the corner or he kicks, and that's flowing into something else. I think that's really important for Milwaukee to where now, okay, we don't have anything on this side. Let's swing it to Brooke, who's spaced. And now he can go into a dribble handoff with a Malik Beasley. And that becomes even more important when, once Chris Middleton comes back, that's where you can start to get some of that side-to-side action. We've seen them run V action all season to where Dame is able to have two high screens come up for him. He can go either way. If nothing's there, we don't have to force a shot. Let's hit Giannis. Giannis goes into a dribble handoff. Now we got Giannis in the post. Are you doubling? Now we can play out of that. That's the kind of flow it's good to see Milwaukee hit. And those are the kind of notes they have to hit going into the postseason. You know, I still believe, I know there's a lot of points on Dame's play. The shooting percentages, the thing for me that stood out, the drives have stayed consistent. Mm-hmm. I think a big piece of that is him being able to get into a paint touch, him being able to get to the foul line, him being able to open things up for Milwaukee that way. I think that's a huge plus. I think the high pick and roll has been very good. I think them running it with Giannis, setting his screens higher, have also been interesting. I'm sure you have something on that. But the Dame Giannis two-man game, to where it's not just pick and roll. Hey, let's mix in some pass and cut. Let's let Dame choose which direction he wants to go. Let's get a rescreen. Let's set a high pick and roll. Oh, they defend two on the ball. Let's get a rescreen. If they can build on that, because, you know, this is no disrespect to Giannis, but he just kind of stands there on the rescreen.
there's still some kinks to work out.
So he'll set the first screen, and then he'll kind of roll, and Dame will be just kind of messing around in space. And he's in position, but it's like, oh, you going that way. Oh, okay, all right.
But I'll let you go, and then I'll just fill in behind you. That's cool. But no, just very quickly on the Bucks front, because like the super high pick and rolls have stood out, particularly when it's Dame and Brooke Lopez. Like you mentioned the V action, so they'll have like Brooke and Bobby Portis, or Brooke and Giannis, or Giannis and Bobby Portis, whatever the case may be. But with Dame and Brooke Lopez in particular, and like shout out to 1 second Spectrum, but also the location filters where you can see like, hey, what are these super high ball screens look like? So let's say like basically from the hash extended And you can also filter for the backcourt, too, if you want to get really granular with it. But at any rate, naturally, Damian Lillard and Brooke Lopez lead the NBA in those super high ball screens in times of volume. 124 of those so far this year. Devin Booker and Yusuf Nurkic is second. Luka Doncic and Derek Lively's third. They have combined for 100. It's one of the funnier numbers that I have seen. Like, that is just the thing with Dame and Brooke. And, like, we've talked about it throughout the year in terms of just pick and roll chemistry, because, like, the numbers for the Dame Giannis pick and roll have been good for outside of, like, the opening month. They've been really good numbers wise. But as you've talked about, we've talked about, like, some of the film, you can see there is still work to be done in terms of chemistry and Giannis screening and rolling and what they do there. But the numbers have been good. With Brooke and Dame, like, that's just been good all year long. Mostly because Brooke is just a much better screener than Giannis is. That is a large band to navigate through and navigate around. And so once you add Dame and his shiftiness and you put them in even more space, which very quickly, not just the super high pick and rolls, but in general, I really enjoyed the way Milwaukee has been clearing space. When they're setting up the Brooke, the Dame Brooke stuff or the Dame Giannis stuff, they do a really good job of keeping those wings clear. So I'll quickly note that portion. But if you're getting these screens at half court and now you're just running into a brick wall, and as you noted, like, the shooting for Dame hasn't been great. Even the drives, like, in terms of the burst, it hasn't been the same. If even this version of Dame, if you're giving him this kind of room, good freaking luck, he will finish or get to the free throw line. Now, I am quiet, if we can be not even respectfully messy, just I'll very briefly, quietly, if you want to lower the volume for the post edit, I am keeping an eye on, like, how Dame is seeking out contact on some of these drives. Because it's starting to, like, and again, I'm not going to be the one to, like, super complain about it. Like, you know how I feel about, like, Trey and other guys. Like, I'm not anti-foul drawing. But I'll just say, like, you go to the Portland year last year, it's a lot I'm blowing by you. This year, it is starting to lean a little bit more towards the, ooh, I feel you coming on the right side. Let me get over here a little bit and then try to finish through. Just keeping an eye on that portion of it, especially if we're getting into, like, playoff, like, projections, what that's going to look like. So I'm keeping an eye on the burst and just the general, like, what's the balance there. But the overarching point, you're still getting good stuff out of the Dame drives. And to that point, it's 48 players with at least 500 drives so far as of recording. In terms of points per possession generated, Dame is fourth. And this is the year that we all feel bad about. Tyrese Halliburton, one, Luka, two, DeMar DeRozan, three. And Dame is four. Number five is Giannis. So that's pretty funny that those two are right there. But yeah, what you got?
I could call a quick 20 second in there. Okay. DeMar DeRozan, huh?
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan. What an interesting season it's been for him and the Chicago Bulls. But we're going to set them to the
back.
The
sorry. We'll caught me.
We'll circle back. Yeah, the top 10 is fine. Top 10 is fun. Tyrese, Luka, DeMar, Dame, Giannis, Shea is 6, Donovan Mitchell 7, Brandon Ingram 8, James Harden, I guess he's not washed, he's 9, Devin Booker 10, and Anthony Edwards is 11. The funny one is TJ McConnell at 12, but, like, the drives have been good in Indiana, and that offense in general has been fantastic. Anyway, the high pick and rolls have been super fun. To your point, like, I love that there is more chemistry building, more flow out of Dame and Giannis. Like, that should bode well for them. The spacing has been really good. The one thing I am keeping an eye on, especially with the super high pick and rolls with Brooke, is just what happens if Dame does get caught, like, inside the arc, if they pitch it back to Brooke. Like, where exactly is he settling? Because in the Minnesota game in particular, it's, like, super high screen, and then he's, like, 5 or 6 feet behind the three-point line, and he gets the catch, and it's like, okay, you can make some of these. However, I don't know if teams are going to guard those. And, like, in the back of my head, I've kind of gotten the, how is Brooke going to be defended on the perimeter when they space him in the corner? Like, what is that going to look like? And so with those super high ball screens, you get the extreme example of, nah, let's just try to get back to Dame and make sure he doesn't get anything easy. And then Brooke's just kind of, he's way out there. And he's not a Kristaps level shooter. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on, at least. But Milwaukee's offense is looking, we're getting there.
I think it's a fair point to ask because it is very loud because of the commitment to Dame. It's like, oh, well, Brooke's just there. They're fine with that. Even if they're not, it's a tough rotation. Do they blend in more, like, that's the tough part because it's so high. Brooke, even if he rolls hard, is only going to get so far if it's set up that high. So now is it more you got the shot or you got the drive or you can flow into something else? Those type of beats. I wonder. That's a good point you brought up. Quick sidetrack because you unlocked something in my brain. Two of my favorite bits is you mentioned last year was Dame driving, like, by you. I feel like this year is Dame, like, driving through you. Like, I have taken two dribbles. You are still here. Yeet. And then my other favorite bit, I did mention it again with Denver. When Jokic gets a switch, he's like, cool, I'm ready to guard. And then someone hits him with the first step and gets by him. And he immediately just slaps their arm. Like, yeah, good job, man. Here's this
check ball.
Here's this foul. Take out of bounds. That's one of those are two of my favorite bits. But back to Milwaukee. You know, man, I do this bit every year where I question Milwaukee's lineup versatility. And then I have a moment of, hey, you know what? It's not that bad. Pat Connaughton shooting 47% from three over the last 15 games. In the calendar year of 2024, 48.4% from three. Now, of course, low volume. I know you're going to raise your hand on that, but that feels important. That feels important because if you have a Pat that is defending and knocking down shots, that at the very minimum is going to open up some lineup versatility. Jay Crowder, I looked at his threes. I think he's like 0 for his last nine over five games. I still believe because that man is going to defend and he's going to do his job. Danilo Gallinari, putting it on for all the old heads. Team Monarch, that man came in, drove. I was like, wait a minute. Got a little juice in his step. Hold on. Patrick Beverley, his defensive mindset while also playing with Dame and looking to aid. That's my other favorite bit. When Pat Bev plays with Dame, and Pat Bev initiates, and he's like pointing for Dame to get the ball or something, and it doesn't work, and then he immediately goes to talk to Dame. Like, oh, no, we got you, I'm like, he really meant that.
No, we gonna get this relationship right.
We gonna get that right. But I kind of like some of the optionality to where you go with Giannis and Brooke. You can go with Portis and Brooke. You can go with Gallinari and Portis. You can go with Giannis and Portis. You can kind of mix and match some bigs that way. And you get some small lineups once Middleton comes back. That intrigues me. That's something I'm keeping an eye on. And we're going to find out a lot about this team, in all honesty. They have two games against someone's Charlotte Hornets.
So that's crazy.
Which should be interesting. Then they play the Bulls, and then it is Western Conference time, the guys. Clippers, Warriors, Lakers, Clippers, Kings.
Yeah, it's time to fine-tune some things.
We're going to find out exactly what they've worked on and how good it is. But I have been intrigued by it, man. It's been fun to watch. I will ask this.
Okay.
Very, very quickly. Actually, you know what? I'm not even going to ask this. I'll let you go and cook. But I do want to give a salute to Giannis. He has 22 games, scoring 30-plus points on 60% shooting. That's the most in a season in the league since Shaq had 23 in 1994-95.
Not bad.
He is still on pace to be the first player in NBA history to average 30 points on 60% shooting. It's kind of wild. Basketball's fun.
Basketball is indeed fun. Like, also, just quick hat tip to the Giannis passing. Not going to go as far as some others, but he is a ridiculous passer. And I do think, I feel like I've said this on this podcast like 8 times at this point. I do think some of the driving nuance with Giannis gets missed. Not just the passing, but just how he alters stride length and the way he's able to find these crevices. And like with the way that the Bucks are spacing now, and in general, the impact of having Dame on the floor, even with him not shooting well, he has even more room to set up some stuff. And so I'm having a lot of fun with some of the inside the arc catches for Giannis now, to where now it's just a dribble and a spin that popped in the Philadelphia game, where it's like, huh, Giannis is just kind of catching and spinning. And now he has a guy to beat, or a second guy is now rotating over versus here's a wall. Or even if it ain't the wall, here's his defender and someone just already here to kind of meet him there. And so the fact that the Bucks are figuring out stuff to where the driving lanes are just a little bit wider for Giannis, and now he isn't having to worry about a second or a third defender until his first or second pivot is done, that changes a lot. And so I've had a lot of fun with that. And then you mentioned Pat Connaughton. So nice that he's knocking down shots again. Because I've always loved the Pat Connaughton super late angle flip when he's setting screens for Giannis to help set up some of those drives. And the defense still isn't quite where I want it to be or what we've seen from Pat in the past, but like it's been serviceable enough. And then you add that shooting. I think Doc meant that when he said, I'm trying to get Pat going. I think he'll take this portion. And then also just respectfully, Messi, while we're on lineup stuff with Milwaukee, the fact that Chris Middleton's out and we still ain't seeing Andre or Marjan to garbage time, it might just be cooked for them. This year, we might see more of them next season. We'll see what's going to go on there. But
I think they're more on team get stay ready, stay mm-hmm. ready. So you gotta get ready. Is there an Eastern Conference team that you wanted to talk about?
You're already laughing. So yes, yes, there is. As is tradition on the Dunker Spot, we get the February / post All-Star break defense from the Charlotte Hornets. And wouldn't you know it, the Charlotte Hornets are defending their tails off. Like, they've been defending their tails off since Grant Williams and literally everyone else in that second unit got there. But no, best defensive league post All-Star break. I will say, to the numbers portion, one, small sample size, duh. Two, the fact that the Blazers missed every three in existence in their game on Sunday, that's also going to skew at least some of the, like, the location field goal percentage stats. But in general, this is a team that has played harder, and that part's been cool. And, like, bit aside, as I was, again, looking, I watched the Hornets, you know, you can laugh at that if you want, but, like, watching them and then just kind of looking at some of the numbers, like, oh, they are doing the thing again. It brought me back to when I was in Charlotte last year for, I think it was the Kevin Durant debut with Phoenix, post-trade, all the good stuff. If I remember correctly, he got traded, but he was already out. And so it was a few games till he made the debut. But anyway, I asked Steve Clifford ahead of the game, like, hey, with offenses evolving, more shooting, better spacing, inverting actions, et cetera, like, what are you seeing from defenses? What can they do to counter things? Do you already notice a trend of things that may become more prevalent as the league goes on, whatever? He did mention at the end of his answer, like, we're probably going to see more zone. And I think that was the year where Miami was, like, literally setting the tracking era record for, like, most zone possessions in the season at that point. But he mentioned that. But to paraphrase, and maybe I'll just clip, you know, like, link the tweet in the description or something if you want to listen to the actual video. But anyway, to paraphrase, he said, to me, you have to be more aggressive. I don't think you can sit back like you used to and just hope guys miss. You have to have ways to double team and get the ball out of guys' hands. And then he kind of went to a thing like, you know, not every team is Phoenix where you have Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, but you got to be able to get aggressive. You can't sit back. He also mentioned the importance of the fundamentals are still there. You got to get back on defense. Can't give easy transition stuff. Don't foul in possessions. And so I went back and listened to that. And I went, dug into some of the numbers with Charlotte. And, like, sure enough, on the season, they're fifth in pick and roll blitz rate. Nick Richards has been at the level all year long. Before Mark Williams went down, like, it was one of the things I chuckled at earlier in the season. I was like, this is the big guy. You would think, in theory, okay, we got Mark Williams now. We can kind of hang back in the drop, funnel guys inside. Like, nah, we're going to have you at the level sometimes, too. You are not exempt. So, like, he is very much stuck to that ethos. And in post-trade, that's, like, up to fourth. So, like, not a big difference there, but they will put two on the ball if necessary. And then looking at post-ups, no team or only one team has doubled at a higher rate than Charlotte since the trade deadline, et cetera. And so they do that. They definitely pressure. And then you get into the second unit with this group, and it becomes more switch heavy. This is with Grant Williams at the five. They'll have Bryce McGowan's in there, 6'7" and lanky. Vasilije Micic from OKC. He's the smallest guy in the lineup. He's 6'5" and sturdy. So it's not like you have a small guy to pick on against Charlotte. You have JT Thor out there. You have Zero out there. And ultimately, it's just like a bunch of like size or similar size dudes that can just switch, and they don't really worry about who it is because we're all strong to some degree outside of Bryce. And even then, he's like, again, he's 6'7" and lanky, and he's like big for a guard. And so they are able to just kind of flatten you out defensively with that second unit. You got Grant Williams just barking out things. And I do appreciate, with the switching, and you know how I feel about soft switching in particular, it's very much a season one of the Dunker Spot deal. So, like, why are you just giving up this matchup? What's happening here? Why are you doing that? With Grant at the five, there is at least a hint of nuance where, okay, this isn't really a threat. I'm going to stay here. He communicates early enough. Nah, you just stay with your matchup. We're fine. This is a fake screen. We're not worried about it. Or even if it is, you're there enough to where I don't have to worry about it. You'll get like a little push from Grant. So it's like a pseudo drop, but like, there is a little bit of nuance there. So I do appreciate like that portion of the defense. The one thing I would say keep an eye on is the way that Charlotte is doubling post-ups. Like, you can naturally do a lot of different things. You can double from one pass away. You can double from the baseline if you want to. If you want to double two passes away, which is like the guy next to the entry pass or whatever. Like, different teams do different things. Charlotte is very much a, we will double from one pass away. We are trying to hit you early. We will go from there. Like, I think about a team like Phoenix, and every team would do this. Like, I talked about Aaron Gordon a little bit earlier, to where you may have like the non-shooter initiate the offense and toss in the entry pass and then cut through to the other side. And then now the good shooter is one pass away. Like, Phoenix does it a bunch. with Josh Okogie, and then he'll pass it, cut through, and now it's Devin Booker, or now it's Grayson Allen one pass away. You try to do that against Charlotte, they do not care. As that guy is cutting through, nope, it's a hit. We are here. Have fun dealing with this. And so, like, watching some of their defensive possessions, like, the one loss they've had since the trade was against Golden State, and we got some antics there. I have a rant on that very briefly. But anyway, like, I think about that Golden State game. I think it's Pods and Dario Saric go with a pick and roll on the left side of the floor. Seth Curry's in. He didn't play in the Blazers game on Sunday. But anyway, so Seth Curry switches on to Dario Saric. And you're thinking, okay, well, this double's probably going to come. Grant Williams now one pass away. So he doubles. And Andrew Wiggins makes the smart play. They kind of know this is what Charlotte wants to do. They're going to send a double from one pass away. Let's see if we can set up a cut behind that. So Andrew Wiggins cuts. And because Brandon Miller is kind of the one that's splitting behind that, Brandon Miller technically gets beat on the cut and he still gets the deflection because he's just long as heck. And it's like, ah, this is part of the calculus to why they do this. And then even with the one pass away thing, if Cody Martin is the one defending the point of attack or the entry pass guy, he is so good at like playing between that guy and getting down, digging on the double. Like there was a possession in the Blazers game, early transition thing. DeAndre Ayton jets down the middle of the floor, gets a deep seal. Grant eventually pushes him out. But, like, he's there. Chris Murray's bringing the ball up the floor. It's like, okay, cool. This is going to happen. Cody Martin recognizes that DeAndre Ayton is jetting behind him. He's like, all right, let me sag back out. But I recognize that you are my matchup. But I'm going to drop back here so you can't make the early pass. He gets out to Chris Murray. Entry pass comes. Cody Martin literally hops, waits another beat, and then just shoots down to DeAndre Ayton as he gets ready to set up this post up, steals the ball, is going the other way. And it's like, that's high octane stuff. Like, it's risky. There are obvious counters to the way that they do it, but like the decisiveness that they have with that has been a lot of fun to watch. They're just doing a really good job. They're just doing a really good job. They're getting back in transition. They are not fouling. They are fifth in opponent free throw rate since this trade. And they were, we'll just say they were not that good before the trades were made. So that's bounced up. The one thing that has fallen, and again, I attribute that more to the smaller units that they're playing with the second unit, like teams are blitzing them on the offensive glass. But even then, they're giving multiple efforts after the offensive rebound. So like teams aren't converting on those a bunch either. We will see what happens when the sample grows. Cause like last year, they were best post All-Star break defense in the league. We got about a month out that slipped to like seventh or eighth and then eventually got to 12th, et cetera. So like that can happen. But I did want to quickly shout out what Charlotte's doing right now.
I'm glad you did that. And I was going to say, I was going to ask you a question. How do you think Steve Clifford feels going from some of the comments he made prior to some of this success to now being able to look at a team and be like, hey, you know, they're actually trying. Like, you know,
this could be part of our identity. I was going to say, like, if your head coach is saying, like, this is going to sound funny, but they're out there trying, that from the top, that's not what you want to hear. Because the first thought is then, wait, why weren't they doing that earlier? And then secondarily, hey, so they traded a bunch of these dudes, the good teams, and now the defense gets better? Why weren't y'all?
Say space. We got the game plan now, and they're listening to us. They're locked in. This is a new identity. You see what we can do, right? Yeah. That's the counter. Yeah.
Yeah. So that part has certainly been funny. So, like, quick shout out to the Charlotte defense. And then just very quickly on the offense, like, the trade man step backs are back. That's been a lot of fun. Misic running a whole bunch of pick and roll. Grant Williams seems very comfortable operating as a screener and flowing all over the place. He's knocking down shots. Brandon Miller is, hey, man, he's just third in rookie of the year voting now, right? Is that the bit? Like, Lively missed a bunch of time. Jaime missed time. Brandon Miller's just, he's good. Still keeping an eye on the drives. I still love the intent to get downhill. We will continue to keep track of some of the passing decisions as he gets into the paint. But the shooting is fun. The off-ball movement is fun. Him screening for Cody Martin in pick and roll, like, that's fun to me at the very least. Like, point Cody hasn't been the Hornets, our top 10 offense. Like, the offense during the stretch has not been good, so I'm not going to, like, oversell it. But, like, in general, and then I'll leave it here because this is a whole lot of Hornets talk. But in general, like, I do appreciate Charlotte giving Cody Martin room to spread the wings a little bit. Like, I'm glad he's healthy, first and foremost. But beyond that, if you project Cody to be a part of, you know, the play-in push for next year, or if you're going to do the natural, hey, he's an interesting role player on a bad team, what happens if he's on a good team? I think him getting these reps should help him in the long run. If he's on a better team, whether that's in Charlotte or elsewhere, him being able to be trusted to run a secondary pick and roll versus, again, this is, he's legit initiating stuff in Charlotte. Like, that's not his natural role. But, like, with that, he should be able to handle more secondary pick and rolls on a good team without you biting your nails like, oh, snap, what's it going to look like? The drives, the passes, then what he's doing defensively. Like, I'm just enjoying this Cody Martin stretch, and I will cap it there.
Salute. And that right there is a dunker spot special. Nikias lets us know what the Hornets are doing. You need, and you can't say you didn't expect it, because literally in our first intro, he ranted about the Hornets. So, hey, we got to indulge our guy. Who else you got, that's Nikias?
True. Oh, I'll just quickly say on the defense note, it's also kind of funny in light of the Steve Clifford comments, but I did want to highlight Dallas's defense. Okay. Since the trade, so I guess since February 10th, I think was the debut date, and they got OKC out of there. But anyway, since February 10th, the Mavericks are fourth in defense. This is also very funnily timed considering what Indiana just did to the Mavericks. Yeah. So, you know, great job there. But I did just want to quickly highlight, funny enough, PJ Washington has taken on a lot of tough assignments, and he has held serve in these assignments. The Mavericks have at least tried to be scheme versatile with Daniel Gafford. They've had him at a drop. They've had him at the level. Tossed in some late switching. You know, we talked about it after the debut. Like, huh, we got some zones from Dallas. This is interesting. So I feel like they're still trying to find a balance there. I will say that Pacers game was probably the, you know, as we got into like questions about the fits and stuff when we talked about, you know, the trade deadline episode. Like, that Pacers game was probably the one where, like, see, this is what I was worried about here. You get him in a drop and it's deep, or you ask him to do different stuff, and Indiana's able to play out of that. But on balance, like, Gafford's been fine. And I think the offensive impact is very obvious for what he's been able to do. But in general, I've enjoyed PJ Washington. Luka's still trying. And with his size and who they put him on, like, that's kind of all they need. Been able to function. Josh Green has been fun. Derrick Jones Jr. back on the bench, but he's pressuring the heck out of the ball when he comes in. I just wanted to give the quick hat tip to the Dallas defense, because if the defense is at a certain level, you have Luka, who just generates two on the ball out of thin air. And Kyrie has been phenomenal as of late. And so they have the firepower offensively. They just need to get the defense to a level. The defense has certainly been at the level since these deals have been made.
Well, I think one thing with their defense, don't forget what a healthy Maxi Kleber can do for them defensively with his versatility, yeah, the amount of positions he can defend. And they also feel like they tend to just have size. I just feel bigger than usual as far as having length and the personnel to really execute some of these things and survive some mistakes. The one thing with me about that Indiana game is I felt like Indiana was very much like, hey, Luka, why don't you help and recover? Hey, two people are on this weak side. It's Luka and Kyrie. One of y'all going to make this decision. Hey, Daniel Gafford, do you want to double this post up? Are you sure you know where to rotate after you double this post up? Hey, mm-hmm. Derek Lively, you're in a drop. I'm Tyrese Halliburton. Here's a jump shot. Hey, Derek Lively, you're a rim protector. I'm driving at the paint. That's Miles Turner in the corner. It just felt very much like, let's just poke at these specific things. And so it's one of those, you know, we start thinking about playoff context. Is a team going to use that? Because I think it's something we've talked about this season where I think that the hack, or we think that the thought process is, can we just put player X as the weak side help and either get what we want on the roll or get what we want on the skip? And is that going to be the thing for Dallas to where actually we don't want to put Luka in this action? We want to make Luka help and recover, which he's, you know, it's not like he's been terrible at it. The Pacers also play with a vroomy vroom vroom pace, which is,
it's just different.
It's a little different. You get sucked into that. And now you're trying to score. You're an offensive team. And now pop, everything goes off. Miles Turner was great. But I just wonder, is that something that they have to now counteract with their improvements defensively? Just thought.
No, I think that part's fair. And like, to the pace point, like, there are other teams in the West that rank in like the top 5-6 in pace. I don't think there's a team that plays like in the half court as fast as Indiana does. So even projecting like playoff issues, Dallas may not have to deal with that to that degree. But like, to the foundation of it, hey, let's just make Luka the primary helper. Let's go pick and roll one shooter on that in that weak side corner. Hey, Luka, what you gonna do about it? there is some stuff he's going to have to solve there. To your point, he hasn't been terrible at it. And when he is engaged, he's honestly fine. He doesn't have the foot speed, but like if he's in early enough, he is a strong dude. So he can just get a hand on the roller and then get back out of there. And it'd be fine. Let's just shift the body here, funnel you to the baseline. Or if guys are rotating back up, okay, we'll let you get middle, but there's a whole lot of hands here. So you're not going to get anything easy. We can play out of there. So like Luka has that awareness. Like we've seen that in spots this year. We've seen that going back 2 years ago, I think at this point, when Dallas had the surprise top 10 defense. Luka can do that portion. He's not going to be a lockdown guy. I remember earlier this year, like I cited like the isolation stats, like baking some of that in is, the guys that are isolating him are some of the weaker guys at the end of the clock. Or if it is a good defender, everyone else is loaded up behind it. So it's not just Luka is a stopper. But again, you just need him to be able to function within a system. And he has proven that he can do that for extended stretches. We got the 2 year, 2 years ago sample. We've seen it some this year. That's all you need. It is still worth keeping an eye on in a playoff setting. What if he just has to do this over and over and over and over and over again? But props there. Props there. I'm trying to think, is there any other team that I want to shout out? I guess I'll leave it there because I just spent 15 on the Hornets. But we'll leave it there on the teams that have caught the eye. Who are some teams that we are thinking about? A little transition there. Here, I'll go very quickly.
You want to go really quickly?
Yeah, I'll go quickly.
Okay.
It's not a big thing. Like, I will start one, like, the Phoenix Suns are not bad, and, like, Bradley Beal is obviously out, and that is a big health question that's baked into the trade. Like, that's part of why he was available, is because he hasn't been the healthiest dude. And part of the calculus into Phoenix's ceiling, which, if they hit it, they can win a title this year. But part of that calculus is Bradley Beal being available. He hasn't been. So that's a natural question. Beyond that, though, I just keep an eye on Phoenix's lineup versatility, and more specifically, okay, what exactly are these KD at the five lineups? What can they do? How many of these can they get to? What's their best one? How does it match up against some of the West elite? Because I think in theory, it is very easy to see why you would want to do that offensively. If KD is your five, like there are only, how many teams can truly match up with Phoenix in that regard? If you got the true big three with KD, Booker, Beal, probably Grayson Allen with the shooting. Now you got Royce O'Neal. If that's your five, like how many teams can earnestly match up with that? Like not many, right? And so I get it. But I also look like within that, I guess for me, like Royce still remains a help point, which is why it's a good thing that he can make quick decisions and still make shots. Like he very much can make them pay. So it's not like a bad thing. But teams do help off of him. And as we've seen without Beal there, if Eric Gordon's in that spot, like teams are helping off of those guys more aggressively than I thought. And like the double team willingness hasn't dipped in the way that you would, at least I would think. Just thinking about it theoretically. And so it's just like, okay, what exactly are you getting out of this? I think you have to be even more meticulous with how you're spacing if teams are still going to double. So you can set up, okay, if the ball is going to swing twice now, the guy taking the corner three is now Grayson Allen, or the last guy to attack is now going to be Devin Booker if KD is the one being posted up, et cetera. And like to that point, because I pulled up, went to clean the glass, pulled up the KD at the five numbers, so filter with him on, all the centers off the floor. It's worth noting that the Suns have a 39.3 three-point rate in the KD at five lineups, which is much higher than their regular season number. That's a 79th percentile number league-wide. So, like, they do get the threes up. They're just kind of eyeing, okay, how much time are they taking to get to this? Who are the players that are actually taking these threes? Is there a level of teams dictating, well, if we double here and help here, we can get this guy to take the three? He might be a solid shooter, but it's one that we can live with. Can Phoenix do more to really punish teams in that regard? And then defensively, teams are rebounding nearly 40% of their own misses in the KD at the five lineups. That is an awful number to project forward. And in general, like this is still like it's a small ball lineup naturally. But even within that, it's KD and then it's a gap between with the size. And so I do just kind of wonder, are they really going to get enough offensively out of these? Because like the talent speaks for itself, but in terms of shot profile, are they going to get enough out of it? And then defensively, can they get stops and can they finish possessions with what they have out there? And like season-wide, 342 possessions with KD on the floor without a center. It's a minus 8.5 net rating right now. And so they have a lot of season to figure this out. But that's where I'm just like, okay, what exactly is this going to be? Can they find the right answers there?
No, I offer no pushback. I think it's the lineup stuff is something I've been tracking, especially since, hey, we're going to try and sprinkle in Bol Bol at the four. We're going to try and, you know, play Royce O'Neal with different people. They've been mixing and matching a little bit. That's been kind of fun. The small ball part, for me, I have to wait until Bradley Beal is healthy to kind of fully understand what the total vision would be. I think the interesting part for me, and just to add to what you're saying, one in that Lakers game, they just recently played, Nurkic was very active, I felt like. Mm-hmm. He was very active for the most part. You know, obviously you're going to get the drop possessions where someone just runs right into him. But one of the little tweaks they had in the fourth quarter was, hey, you know what? Royce O'Neal, you guard LeBron. KD, you guard Anthony Davis. Nurk, you got Rui. And they actually switched Nurk once the Lakers did a screen. I was like, that's interesting. Again, teams trying to be proactive and, okay, we're going to, you want to attack it, you're going to attack it with this person. And now we're going to try and set up our defense this way. They did a switch. They tried to switch and double. LeBron was like, actually, I'll just go around, Nurk. So it wasn't ideal, but those are the kind of things where I'm like, okay, Phoenix is trying to run through some things and trying to figure some things out. But the Royce O'Neal fit has been really good. And I think when you're talking about those smaller lineups, his ability to make the right decisions offensively and be impactful in the role, I don't think they have another person like that. Grayson Allen will make some decisions, but defenses will treat him a certain way on the short roll. I think Royce has that combination of I can roll, I can kick, I can stop, pop, all that good stuff. So I think that's the positive there. I'd probably wait for Beal. My only headlock with Phoenix is, boy, they're really good. Do you see the shots they can generate in pick and roll? Hey, you know what, man? This is a whole lot of pick and roll, man. Hey, do you see what they operated and generated out of pick and roll? I just kind of go back and forth. I don't know what to do with it. That's just full confession from me to the dunkers. But they're because it's the same thing that gives you the, wow, that's a very tough matchup in the playoffs. It's the same thing where they're up 10. And it's like, wait, y'all are still just spamming pick and roll, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
And then they go on an 8-0 run right after. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's funny you say that, because like a thought that I had as I was thinking about Phoenix, like I was driving home, just thinking about the Suns. But anyway, I was like, top end talent, again, KD, Booker, Beal, if healthy, like that's insane. And the question that I had for myself that I was trying to sort through on this drive, like, is even with the talent, and it sounds inherently disrespectful, but like, is Phoenix the easiest of the contending teams to scheme for?
Yes and no. No, because that's a lot of talent.
Yeah. But like conceptually.
Yes, because you could eventually land into a space where actually, you know what? We're going to stay at home and play drop and you just shoot. And that's all you get. You just get these shots. But also no, because it's they have the most ability to make you change your mind or feel bad about that idea very quickly. It's a tricky balance. I wouldn't say, no, you're wrong, but I also could see how, you know what? We're just going to pick our poison. That's it. This is what you get.
Yeah. Like I contrast that with like Denver, for example, where it's just like, okay, we just have to try our best against the Murray-Jokic duo. Like they have an answer to literally everything. And with Phoenix, again, we know what kind of top end talent they had. That's why I want to be intentional about, I am not trying to disrespect the Suns or think they're bad or anything like that. But like to Steve's point, are they a team where you can get to, okay, well, we're going to do this. Like KD might just average 40 and that's just kind of tough. Booker might average 35. That's just kind of tough. But like conceptually, okay, I'm not worried about cycling through four different coverages. We're just going to do this because this is the profile of these guys. These are the role players we feel good about helping off of these guys. We know what we're going to do. It's just a matter of, can we execute it enough? And will they hit enough shots? With like a team with Denver, it's like, okay, I don't really know what we're going to do. I guess we have to land on this. And if they blow this up, we got to do something else. Because this is hurting us, period. Which, you know, circle back to the Denver conversation. It's so fun when they just cycle through. Now, we're going to keep running this. It's going to be the exact same setup. You did something differently. Now it's Murray's turn. Now it's Gordon's turn. Now it's Jokic's turn. Phoenix can get there, but I'm not at that point compared to like a Denver or some of the other teams in the West. So that's why I had that question. But yeah, I just kind of want to keep eyes on what they do there. And to that point, you mentioned Royce has been really good already. I do want to see what the Thad Young portion is going to look like. Because in theory, with just the short roll decision-making alone, or just the in-space decision-making alone if you're sending double teams, like, he should be able to just nail that portion. I will make the right pass, et cetera. But even then, with, in the back of my head, it's just like, ooh, he will make the quick decision, but what if that decision is still the one that teams want to live with against Phoenix? What if it's double KD ball to Thad? We're staying home on Book and Grayson Allen. The ball, it is just going to be with Royce now. He can shoot, so it's not like bad, but you know, that again, that's just kind of the loop I'm in with Phoenix right now. So I figured I would toss that portion out there. Did you have any teams?
Man, you know, I've been just thinking about the Sixers, thinking about the Knicks, thinking about them trying to work through this phase, looking at Philadelphia, and teams were like, Tyrese Maxey, we're locked in on you two on the ball. And Philadelphia was like, you know what? We're going to mix in some more movement. We're going to try and play quick decisions. Buddy Hield, you be a screener for Tyrese Maxey. We can play out of that. Let Tyrese get downhill. And then teams were like, actually, we're just going to switch that. And we're going to switch most of these other actions that you're running. And if we need to help, we're going to help. But outside of that, we're just going to try and keep everything in front. You have to deal with that. How do they overcome that? And what do they try and do with that going forward during this stretch, I think is going to be important. The Knicks, I kind of have the same thought process. But I think with the Knicks, especially watching that Celtics game, hey, Jalen Brunson, let's get you on the move. Let's get you some movement before your pick and roll. And then if you run empty side pick and roll, let's use that to start our movement. So it'll just be a fake. You swing it ahead, we'll do a dribble handoff on the other side. And then if you're denied, throw to Hartenstein, split, play out of that. That was very fun. And then Boston was like, actually, we're just going to go ahead and put Porzingis on Precious and put Tatum on Hartenstein and just kind of take all that away. So you just kind of watching those teams try and navigate, especially as the gap starts to get closer now, Nikias. And this is where it gets tricky. Indiana, game and a half out of fourth. Miami, 2.5 out of fourth.
Winners of what, three straight for Miami now?
Yeah. I told y'all the Heat were going to be fine. It'll be fine.
You did.
The Magic, 2.5 games out of fourth. They're all a lot closer to Philly than New York. But, you know, does this go from wow, they're going to survive, to wow, they might face each other in the first round, to they might face each other in the play-in?
That would get hazy.
It's just a tough slide. So I figured I'm just keeping an eye on them because they're working. They're working to find the gaps offensively. They've had good possessions, but they're going to have to keep working to find it because these teams are hungry.
Before you move, can I just ask a very quick question for you? Knicks related. Last three games for Bojan Bogdanović, 23 minutes, 24 minutes, 19 minutes. And this hasn't been the healthiest group. I will say they are still sorting through how they want to use Bojan offensively, how they're balancing the spacing portion with the on-ball portion versus the pick-and-roll portion either way. The defense hasn't been super kind. We'll put it that way. Are you at all?
We are literally about five episodes from being able to do a supercut of Nikias just quietly slandering Bojan Bogdanović's defense. And look, man, go ahead. Get your question off. I just wanted to point that out.
No, that's crazy. I just want to ask you, like, are you at all concerned about, or maybe concerned isn't the right word. Or is it at least curious to you, like, hey, what exactly are his minutes going to look like when the team gets healthier slash wants to get in the playoffs? Like, what is the Tibbs trust factor looking like? Because the highest minute game in that three-game stretch was the 24 minutes. He went 6 of 6 from three and had 22 points. If he's just in the you will score or you will not play bag, that gets a little hazy for me as you project Randall comes back, OG comes back.
I think he'll be fine because the context then will help him better than it does now. I think he's in much more of a box right now as far as, hey, we need you to do this. If you're not doing this, I can play Precious 34, 35 minutes. I can play Josh Hart. He's kind of in that context where we're searching for wins. You know what I mean? I think he gets elevated when those guys come back, and now he can play with different combinations, and he can play with OG, and OG can take certain matchups, and Bojan can do more of the Bojan stuff. Like, Bogey is a very talented player, but you do have to kind of not set him up for success, but you got to set him up for usage. And he's got to be the right context. Yeah. You know what I mean? If it's this person has the ball a bunch, this person has the ball a bunch, this person has the ball a bunch. He can get lost in the shuffle sometimes. Or if you're in a scenario where we need stops, we don't value that as much. It sounds wild considering they're not scoring as well. But at the same time, what is our de facto thing? What do we trust? So I think that's where my mind goes. I think he'll be all right.
Okay. So if this guy has the ball and this guy has the ball, this guy has the ball, what is he going to do? Is he Boyan Barrett? Any other teams you want to mention?
You know, man, I'll just give a quick salute to the Sacramento Kings and the work that De'Aaron Fox is putting in. Last four games, 32, 51% shooting, 7 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 2.5 steals. Domantas Sabonis has 39 straight double-doubles and is now one of six players to have 20 or more triple-doubles in a single season. Their defense works, man. Like, they're not going to get the respect or the credit, but they're active. I think with a game plan, they're going to be very interesting, being able to mix coverages. Domantas is just, he keeps hitting people and trying to dunk on everybody. I would just keep an eye. I'm thinking about them in the playoff context. Some of those possessions where they play a little bit slower, is that going to pay off down the line and we're not just relying on the tempo? Some of mixing in the coverages to where James Harden comes off a handoff, it's two on the ball. Kawhi comes off, it's a drop. Is that going to help them in the playoffs? I'll just keep an eye on them real quick. But before we continue, Nikias,
okay,
you ready for me to throw you off the rails?
Sure, what you got?
The things that happened during the podcast recording.
Oh, boy.
Number one, Shams says that the MVP, Stewie, 1 year non-guaranteed below maximum deal to return to the New York Liberty, which, as Christina Williams put it, means they can get someone else on a guaranteed deal.
Okay, so not a protected contract. That's interesting. I'm just trying to think of, again, who's left on the market to that point. Like, again, we have, like, the big EDD question mark if she's going to play basketball, and as such, like, what kind of trade can be worked out there. That would get very funny if that ends up being the end result there.
Don't worry about it.
Then on the free agency mark, again, we talked about Tiana Hawkins, what that can look like, et cetera. But, you know, we'll keep tabs on it, but that's interesting.
Don't worry about it. Also, Warriors guard Chris Paul listed as available to return Tuesday against the Washington Wizards. So there you go, buddy.
The Chris Paul revenge game. How about that? A little
sugar and spice for you, buddy.
Okay, appreciate you, big dog. Huh. Wow, let's do it back. Okay, so those are the star announcements, right? We got the Jonquil news, last week?
Yeah.
Or we can have, so okay. So at least we're finally going to get some figures on that. That's very cool. Okay. Also, very quickly, if we're in the teams that we're just keeping eyes on, like, very boring analysis, and I apologize, but we will continue to monitor what the Minnesota Timberwolves do late in games offensively. See what that looks like. At the high end, you can go Conley Gobert, Ant can go Supernova, Cat can drive. The Cat drives have just been incredibly fun. And so they obviously can find things. On the low end, it is very quick shot heavy, or, hey, we are super deep in the possession. Ant, can you please score for us? And Ant, can you get to the rim? And Ant gets hit, does not get a foul call, and then Ant is yelling at ref. And that is just, you know, something to monitor. In light of, like, their incredibly good season, the defense remains insane, et cetera. So we want to monitor that portion. Steve, any players you want to shout out before we get out of here?
Victor Wembanyama.
The 5x5. That'll
15th player in NBA.
That'll do.
15th player in NBA history with a 5x5. First since Yusuf Nurkic in 2019. 31 minutes, fewest minutes to do it. You know the funniest part? He almost had it.
Could have had another one the night before.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And so. And
four assists.
Yeah. 19 points, 13 rebounds, 5 blocks, 5 steals, 4 assists. But yeah, first player in NBA history to average a 5x5 over a 2-game stretch since 1973-74. Sounds crazy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Him and Michael Jordan, the only players to get 5 steals and 5 blocks in consecutive games. And I love that Wimby's initial reaction was, did he win, though?
Did he win, though?
Did he win, though? And Mike did. He did win those games. Just want to throw it out there. Now, quickly, I just want to give a salute to Victor. That's history. And then Ayo Dosunmu.
Yes.
Last 10 games, averaging 16 points, 4.5 assists, 3 rebounds, 1.2 steals, shooting 56% from the field, 53 from 3. 7 or more assists in 3 of his last 4 games as he does the annual, hey, y'all, I'm pretty good, Chicago Bulls tour, which is going to be funny because I would just like to remind y'all, as y'all look at the play-in, get ready to learn pull-up, buddy. Whether it's DeMar or DeJounte, get ready to learn pull-up. You'll be seated on that Tuesday night for clutch pull-up buckets. All right, bud?
Do we need that? Do we need that? Or, with Trae Young out a month and Onyeka Okongwu out at least the next 2 weeks, if the Hawks slide at all, do we get the DeMar DeRozan revenge game as he hosts the Toronto Raptors?
Well, based on previous events, wouldn't that be a different revenge game?
No, but... Yeah. But I figured we were going to sprinkle that in there. Also, shout out to Ayo Dosunmu, who made my, what was it, a 29-player list on the last episode of the Dunker Spot. His players I'm excited to watch post-All-Star break. He's incredibly fun. I'm glad he's being more aggressive. On my list, a little bit shorter now since we talked about Jokic earlier. He was on mine. Would like to give a salute to Herb Jones, who's averaging 11 points, 4 boards, nearly 3 assists, over a steal, nearly a block per game this year. 58% on twos, 42% from three. Steve, Herb Jones, my guy, is shooting 51% from three on nearly 4 attempts since Christmas. That is a 26-game sample. In addition to the cuts, in addition to the drives, in addition to the transition attacks, which that man is, he is, the Euro steps from Herb Jones are so freaking fun, dude. He's hitting shots. He's hitting shots. I don't believe Herb Jones is a 51% three-point shooter on balance. Like that, there's going to be a dip at some point. But man, if Herb Jones has graduated from like the 31% from three class, I am going to be incredibly excited. Because the defense is all world. And again, he will fill in and do the little things. He'll get you your timely offensive rebounds. He doesn't mind screening, which to that point, keep an eye on the Herb Jones, Zion Williamson screening partnership. We talked about Point Zion last week with JJ, and boy, did that spark some stuff. That was funny. But over 1.4 points per possession on the Zion Herb Jones pick and roll in February. Not a large sample there because you normally get it like early second quarter when it's like Zion Herb plus bench. But just keep an eye on the screening angles from Herb Jones. Again, obviously not the bulkiest guy, very lanky fella, but he's nailing the flat screens. He's getting some of the late flips in there. He's doing the push-offs against slips. He's nailing the little stuff, even if he's not, like, catching lobs and stuff. But the defense, the shooting, I'm really enjoying Herb Jones. Amen Thompson from the Houston Rockets. Every game there's something. Every game there's something with this dude. It's a wild pass. It's an incredible drive against OKC. It's a chase down block on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Every game is something with that dude. The shot is not where it needs to be, but everything else, the passing, the driving, the on and off ball defense, all starting to feel better. The offensive rebounding, which has been fun. He's a dude. He is a dude. And then just quickly on the numbers front, he's played in 20 or more minutes in 8 straight games. That includes 5 starts. During that stretch, he's averaging 13, 10, and 3 with 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks. And he's averaging over 4 offensive rebounds per game during this run. He had 7 against Indiana. He had 6 against New York. We talked about that game. The Knicks tried to put Jalen Brunson on him because, huh, a man is going to run the offense. He's not going to shoot. He's going to be spaced. Nah, buddy, get ready to learn crash and jump. 6 in that game, had 6 against Memphis. He had 5 against Phoenix over the weekend. He just makes stuff happen. Keep giving that dude minutes. And then the last one I want to shout out, DeAndre Hunter in Atlanta. Coming off the bench right now, he's been hurt. Averaging 16 points per game in about 23 minutes off the bench since he's been fully back. They haven't played him in back-to-backs yet, so he's missed 2 games. 20 or more points in 3 of his 4, 3 in his 4 last games, 5 in his last 7. And in general, the big thing for me, as it always is with DeAndre Hunter, how quickly are you going to make these decisions? When you catch the ball, how quickly are you shooting? How quickly are you catching and driving? How quickly are you moving it? That portion has popped heading into the All-Star break and especially in these couple of games post-All-Star break. So he has to keep that up, especially in light of Atlanta's injuries. They're going to need him. I don't know if he enters the starting lineup again or not, but really good play from DeAndre Hunter. Just wanted to give him the quick hat tip there. Any closing remarks? You got a benediction for us.
Quick question for you. What was wilder, the New Orleans Miami skirmish melee or Your reaction when Dennis Schroeder tried to clothesline Mike Conley because he took a shot in the fourth quarter.
Dog, oh, I'm so glad you said that. We can close with that. I am just a podcaster, and as some of you make the jokes in the comment section, like, I am in a chair. I'm very much not on the basketball court, so fair. I just do not get the whole, you shot the ball with 26 seconds left and you're already winning. How dare you? Like, I understand, like, inherently, like, if Mike Conley took the three and did, like, the Steph turnaround midair and then hit, like, the Deion Waiters pose and everything like that, okay, I understand being mad. And even going back to the end of the Hornets-Warriors game, where we got some antics with Grant Williams and stuff, was it not just a layup? Like, if you toss it off glass, go reverse dunk and, I don't know, do a Dougie or something, okay, sure. If there's just a time differential between the play clock and the shot clock, and a shot is taken so we don't have to have the awkward whistle when the refs also know that the game is over, and now we got to prolong this by another 8 seconds and then add a team turnover to the total, which is always funny when we get the moments of the players that don't know it's a team turnover, not an individual turnover. And it's like, oh, no, you take the ball. I don't want it. But, like, if you agree that the game is over, why are we getting mad about a shot being taken while the game's over? Like, I don't get that part, especially if there's no, like, no antics involved. If Mike Conley does the Scottie Barnes toss the three backwards, then okay, you're doing a little too much. If it ain't that, what are we doing? What are we doing? Now everything's taking long because y'all want to push each other.
You are assuming this is just rational thoughts that are being hashed out in real time. This is adrenaline. This is anger. This is frustration. This is a momentary moment where, dog, that's insane. Why are you doing that? This is already bad enough. Why are you doing that? Now, the Warriors-Hornets one was a little different. I mean, literally, the Warriors were winning and shot a layup while winning, and the Hornets had stopped. I mean, Steve Kerr and Steve Clifford were literally dapping it up, and they immediately had to curse out. So, I mean, that one's a little different. The Wolves-Nets one was a little fun. I literally just think Dennis Schroeder did not know how much time was left. But that was just, like, literally, I'm just shooting this so there's no shot. Like, we had to play offense. You know what I mean? It's not like we started with 26 and we got to 4. Like, no. Like, this is before
this the one.
And also, the fact that you tried to clothesline Mike Conley, and Mike Conley's reaction was like, "What? Why would me?"
Like, Dennis Schroeder's like, "What you doing, bro?" I'm just like, "What are you doing? How are you asking this question right now?"
I haven't seen someone that mad at Mike Conley since Chris Paul. Horns?
Thank you. Thank you for watching or listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. If you are watching this on YouTube and you're on JJ Reddit's YouTube channel and you haven't subscribed to JJ Reddit's YouTube channel, you should probably subscribe to JJ Reddit's YouTube channel. We are here every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. Every Tuesday we are here. So if you want to check out more Dunker Spot there, we're here every Tuesday. And beyond that, obviously, there's just great content dropping on the channel all week long. So subscribe, become a better basketball fan, have some fun with us, have some fun with JJ and the bevy of guests that he brings on. Come rock with us. You follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. You will not regret it. If you have a League Pass subscription, you can rock with us, watch games with us live. Steve, please. Watch games with us live. Get real-time analysis. If we get fourth quarter or overtime antics, we got Steve breaking down what happened, what went right, or what went wrong. If you want that stuff, and if you also just want a safe haven to vent about life or some weird stuff on the job or whatever the case may be, you got some food takes you want to share, we do a little bit of everything in these watch party rooms. So if you want to rock with us, the link to the room is in the description. To make a profile, it's very easy process. Set up your profile. It's free. No shenanigans. Again, you do need a League Pass subscription. But if you have that already, sign up. Come rock with us. Watch some games with us. Come chop it up about life with us. Have some fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Great show, Nikias. The only thoughts were Rhea Ripley.